Accession number 27797, Mr. Maurice Franklin, Reel 5. Now, we were talking about you were going, no duties, and you're going on leave periods. You're in this camp in South Wales, round about the summer of 45. So what happens next?
So then I was going, every other week I was going home, and I thought, I might as well go and do some work, because people were wanting stuff, and I could do some work. So I was doing the work, and then I was going back for a week. So I realised it was getting nowhere at all. So I decided, rather than spend the money on the train fare going back and forth, I would phone the CEO at the camp in Wales and say, could you please extend the leave? You know what I mean? Because I'm here now and there's no purpose in coming back because I can get more. Yeah, all right. So they were sending me a cablegram saying, leave extended 7 days, leave extended 48 hours. It was going on like that. Then I got a call to say, would you go to the Tower of London to collect your pay? So as I was working in Shoreditch, and the Tower of London was only a little bus ride away, I used to go every Friday afternoon to the Tower of London, salute the officer there, get my pay, and come back and phone up for the next day to leave. Till eventually, one day, I got a cablegram from the War Department to say, oh, because you were only demobilised by a number, depending on your priority, which was age, whether you're married or single, length of service, all those things that gave you a number, so you had a priority. So because they didn't want to suddenly let hundreds of thousands of men on the labour market uncontrolled like that, just say all finished. So they released you in batches to make it easier to absorb in the community. And I had because I was a young man then, I was in the early 20s, although I was married, I had no children, so I wasn't really a high priority case. So eventually I got a cablegram to say, would you please return to Yeovil for immediate release? I thought, well, that's good. Got nothing to do. So this was in 1940. Yeah, I think it's now 1946.
So this had been going on for...
Yes, it went on a long, long time. So I went...
So you didn't go back to South Wales. You went back to Yeovil to be...
Yeah. So I caught the night train to Yeovil. And I arrived at the camp in Yeovil about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, I was all I had was the soldier's uniform I stood up in. And I don't know where I got my release date. I don't think he's got it there. I don't know where he got release date.
Carry on.
I went to the... What's the last day I do wages?
It's all right, carry on. Yeah.
I went to the... knocked at the door of the office, and they said to me, what are you doing here? I said, well, I've just got this cable here, term for release. He said, well, it's very early in the morning. He said, you have to get yourself fitted out. So I knew I didn't want to stop there, because I thought, if I stop there, I'm stuck in this damn camp now. And I got to make it. So he said, it says here I've got to be released. I've got to do it right away. So, well, first of all, you've got to have a medical examination to clear. You've got to have a medical. Say, okay, you can't just be released like that. So I said, well, where's the MO, the medical officer? He said, well, he's still in breakfast, in the officer's mess, having breakfast. Oh, I said, right. The officer's mess, I knocked on the door. I said, excuse me, I've got special orders here, special orders. The warrant to be released. I want a medical examination. He said to me, well, I don't know you. I've never seen you before in my life. And I'm just having my breakfast. I said, well, don't worry about that. You don't have to look at me. I'm perfectly fit. I'm wonderful. I'm A1. So he discharged me A1 without a question, so he got back to his breakfast. I came back and I went to the office and said, right, now I've got my medical. Can I go now? Can you give me my necessary papers to go now? He said, you can't do that. First of all, you've got to hand all your kit in. I said, I haven't got any kit. He said, what do you mean you've got no kit? I said, I left my kit in South Wales. My kit bag and all the kit there. He said, well, you've got to hand some kit in. So I said, right, I'll go and see the quartermaster sergeant here in charge of kit. So I went to see him, and he was a sergeant like me. So I said, look, I've got a bit of bother here. I left my kit in South Wales. I've got to be released. I've got to hand some kit in. Can you do it? He said, look, leave it to me. He took me down into the basement, one of the cellars there, where there was about 50 kit bags. He said, grab hold of one of those kit bags. He said, thank you very much. Bring it to the office. I brought it to the office. He took it off me, signed it in, put it back in the basement, so my kit had been handed in, and as far as I know, it's still... Then they said to me, by the way, you've got to get your demob suit. I said, look, forget the demob suit. Have it with my compliments to the army. I don't need the demob suit. Just give me my papers and let me go. I didn't want to get bothered, because I had to go to another camp somewhere else for any mob suit, and I wasn't going to hang around. So I left that camp the same day on a train with just the army uniform I was in. I got home. I was home about 4 months. I was working in Shoreditch, where I was working all my life. And I got a cablegram from the army to say, would I go to a little tailor in Old Street to be fitted for my civilian uniform? I thought, that's you. So I went to this tailor in Old Street, which is only a walk away from where I was working, because I worked in Shoreditch. Old Street's only a few yards down the road. And I said, I'll come in and get a suit from the army. Oh, he said, funny. He said, right, he said, have a look at the swatches and pick out material. I thought, that's nice. Made the mason's suit, nobody else got there. So I picked out a nice bit of brown material, which I thought was nice. And he said, right, he said, come back next week for a fitting. I had two fittings, and he made me a suit. When I got home, my wife said to me, why did you pick a brown suit? Why don't you get a navy suit? You know you don't, brown doesn't suit you. I said, I'll never forget. I said, right, I'll go back and tell him this. So I went back to the tailor and said, my wife doesn't like a brown suit. Could I have a blue one? He said, sure. He got blue material and made me another suit. So I got a blue suit instead. And I was released. I've never been discharged from the army. I'm on what is known as WT Reserve. You see, that's what I'm officially at. Of course, they never call me up now at my age. I'm nearly 86. I don't think they're going to need me now. If they do, they must be damn desperate. But anyway, I'm still, as far as I'm concerned, on WT Reserve.
Now, just two things, Bob. You returned to work, and your career was as a woodturner.
Oh, yes.
And that was a... did you have any problems settling back into woodturning?
None at all. It's a work that I love doing, you know. It's very architecturally, it's very... I work for the film studios, the BBC, all the stately homes of England, all the palaces of all over the world, including palaces in the Far East, all that stuff. All the... I'll give you an example for anybody that's ever been to the fire that took place in...
you mentioned Windsor.
Yeah, I did the... you've been to the Great Hall there with all these coats of arms and the people. I made some of those coats of arms. It's up there now. They replaced them.
You obviously enjoyed that work.
Yes, I'm...
Did you have any after effects, mental or physical, from your war service?
Yes, I have.
What were they?
The first thing I found out was... my hearing was affected, because those days there were no earplugs or anything like that. And when you're firing big heavy guns all the time, year after year, with no protection whatsoever, and you're right on top of the gun all the time, I'm sure most of the artillery people have bad hearing, which I've still got today. So many, many years later...
Did you get a pension for that?
No. Many years later, I'm also a member of the British Legion, as well as the Association of Jewish Ex-Servicemen and Women. I'm a member of the British Legion. And the British Legion said to me, well, you should apply to get a pension because you have got deficit. So he said, I said, all right then. So they filled in all the forms for me. He said, we'll represent you, get a pension, the British Legion. So I went to the place in the West End, which is a place there where they examine your hearing. There's a tribunal there. And they gave me a test at this place. Back of Great Portland Street Station it was. This is only about 5 years ago. And after they gave me the test and the hearing specialist gave them the report, you go in front of a tribunal of about five or six people, including a doctor and a couple of army officers and that sort of thing, and they look at the report. And they said to me, well, he said, you've got... It says here, the specialist says, you have a 25% loss of hearing. See? I said, oh, yes. He said, but unfortunately, you can't get a pension unless you've got a 30% loss of hearing. So you're just below it, so I'm afraid there's nothing we can do. So I came home, nothing to do. I came home. So my hearing's got worse and worse. So the British Legion said, well, look, we'll reapply, because it's over 30% now. It must be worse. So they came up with me next time, and I went to have the loss of hearing, and sure enough, it's well over the 30%. And I went before the tribunal again, and he said, well, you know, you said 2 years ago when I was here that my hearing loss was not sufficient. Well, now it's gone over above that limit. Am I now eligible for anything? Because after all, I'm over the limit. He said, well, unfortunately, the law's been changed now, and now you're going to have 42% loss of hearing. So I said, well, it'd be a waste of time, because until I'm stone deaf, you keep moving the goalposts, so I'm not going to keep going. So I've never bothered since. I said to the British team, don't bother anymore to keep applying, because every time I go, they move the goalposts. If I go the next time, I'm 48%, it'll still be 50%. I've never got a pension.
Any other physical effects of your horses, or mental effects?
Long time to settle down. I found it very, very hard to overcome the sights that we did see. And we saw some damn horrible sights, which I've spent the years trying to forget. And I've never spoken to anybody about my war service, actually. And that's all I can tell you, actually. Only because of you're here now that I mentioned it to you.
Did it give you nightmares?
Not nightmares so much, but I see some of these things, and I don't watch war films anymore, like D-Day Land. I don't want to see all that. You know, they did this one about Omaha beating Americans recently, and they made a film or something like that. Everybody raved about it. You must go and see it. You were there. I said, no, I don't want to see it. Thank you very much. I really don't want to see it, because I want to spend the rest of my life forgetting, because there's no purpose in stirring up and remembering, because there's nothing pleasant that I've got to think about it in. No. The fact that I survived is a damn miracle. How I did it, I don't know, because there's nothing I did.
Now, the last thing we want to ask you is about your membership of AJEX, the Association of Jewish Ex-Servicemen. Can you tell me Can you tell me when you joined that and what it does for you? Why it's important?
Well, I'll tell you why it's important. I joined as soon as I came out of the army. I joined a branch that was set up by an Australian, the Monash branch. General Monash set the branch up, and I joined that one first. And then, because there's a branch of the association in almost every borough in London, you might not know it, but every borough's got one. Every town's got one in England, you see. I then moving around, I finished up and I joined the Muswell Hill and District branch of AJEX, of which I am now the chairman. I attend all the memorial services in Whitehall, which I go to every year, as well as our own Jewish memorial service, which takes place the week after the national service in Whitehall. We also have another Jewish service at a Jewish cemetery in Marlow Road, East Ham, which I was there last Sunday, where we had a memorial service and a march from the town hall at East Ham to the cemetery at East Ham. We do that every year.
Do you have local meetings or newsletters?
Our branch meets every month at the local synagogue here, where we use their hall. When we have entertainments tea, we meet all our ex-service men and women. We have holidays, which we organise. We are a registered charity, where we support many, many charities all over the world. We raise hundreds of thousands of pounds for the various charities, mainly particularly ex-service charities, whether they're...
Do you do your own welfare work for Jewish...
We have our own welfare officer. We do our own welfare work. But we also work in conjunction with the British Legion, because we're associated with them, so we support all their functions and all that sort of thing. Yes. And we meet every month, and we have lots of holidays. I'm going away to Bournemouth with them in November for a week. We've just come back from the Isle of Wight, where we spent the week in the Isle of Wight on holiday. We go on holidays abroad. We've been on holidays to America, we've been on holidays to Israel.
All through AJEX?
All through AJEX, yes.
So it is very important to you?
It is very important, yes.
Thank you very much.
Because we've got a lot of people with a common experience. And it's nice to be with them sometimes. And we enjoy their company, yes, yes. We made a lot of friendships. Been a lot of marriages through our association, all that sort of thing over the years. Because I've been a member now for 60 years. That's a long time. Because we've been founded since the Boer War.
Thank you very much.